From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Good evening and welcome to EWTN News Nightly. Thank you for being with us. I'm Veronica Dudo. Tonight we're following several developing stories, including the search for the Brown University gunman, the search for answers in a mass shooting in Australia, and the search for justice in Hong Kong. We begin tonight in Hong Kong, where a court found Jimmy Lai, a Catholic and human rights advocate, guilty of multiple violations of China's national security laws after a landmark two-year trial. Lai was originally arrested in 2020, soon after the law took effect. For decades, he ran a small media empire known for its pro-democracy stances. In 2019, he participated in a massive demonstration and others across Hong Kong, protesting the Communist Party's growing control in the region. This afternoon, President Trump was asked about the verdict.
I feel so badly. I spoke to President Xi about it, and I asked to consider his release. He's not well. He's an older man, and he's not well. So I did put that request out. We'll see what happens.
Right now, we want to bring on Bill McGurn, the godfather of Jimmy Lai, who converted to Catholicism in 1997. Bill, thanks so much for coming on.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So what is your reaction to the verdict, and how are those close to Jimmy Lai processing this update?
Well, the verdict is important and it's not important. It's important because it's part of the Hong Kong process, and everyone knew he would always be convicted. So it's important because we have to get it out of the way. Jimmy cannot be released until he was convicted, and that's why we had to wait all these years for the trial and then his conviction. So in that sense, it's a step forward because we finally can get to deal making now. On the other hand, you know, it was always a charade, the idea that it was fair. You know, the world sees it for what it is. And so I don't, in Jimmy Lai's world, it's not really a big milestone because it's phony. Everything about it is phony.
What deal is potentially on the table, and does President Trump have a hand in anything that you know of?
Yeah, President Trump is essential to the deal. The problem is Jimmy is a British citizen, and the British aren't really pushing his release. Keir Starmer, the prime minister, he needs a little prod to get it done. President Trump has pushed for Jimmy's release. He's brought it up. His people are working on it now, but he needs help. Look, Jimmy's future will be determined by three men: Xi Jinping of China, President Trump of the United States, and Keir Starmer of Britain. And Keir Starmer is important because Jimmy is a British citizen. He's not a Chinese citizen or an American citizen. He's a full British citizen.
What kind of strength has Jimmy and his family been able to derive from their faith during this ordeal?
Well, I've been cut off from Jimmy for about the last 3 years. They don't let my letters go through anymore. But I used to hear from pretty regularly and still in touch with some of the family. They were an extraordinary family. Teresa's wife is a rock. And if Jimmy didn't have Teresa to lean on, he knows it. He wouldn't be strong. I mean, he has his faith, but she strengthens it. That's what they have in common. And the children have all been very eloquent in making appeals for their father's freedom and so forth. So this is an extraordinary faith-filled family.
Bill McGurn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Two of Jimmy Lai's children have spoken out after the verdict came down. His son Sebastian called it a dark day for anyone who believes in truth, freedom, and justice. And his daughter Claire says the verdict, quote, proves that the authorities still fear our father, even in his weakened state, for what he represents. Joining us for more is Jimmy Lai biographer Mark Clifford. Mark, thanks for coming on today.
Well, thanks for your interest in this case.
Jimmy Lai faces up to life in prison. Will he be able to appeal?
Well, I think he could, but as I think Bill McGurn just said so eloquently, this whole process has been a charade. We're happy to get this out of the way. It was The guilty verdict wasn't a surprise. Still feels like a kick in the stomach, quite frankly. I've known Bill. I've known both Bill and Jimmy for 3 decades. And although everybody knew he'd be found guilty, it's still, you know, it's still staggering in its injustice. There was an 855-page verdict, which did nothing but summarize a bunch of vague allegations that showed little more than that Jimmy was a wealthy newspaper owner who believed in democracy, put his money where his mouth was, and in fact put his life on the line. So I don't think he's, I don't know, I'm not privy to this, but I'd be surprised if he wanted to appeal. As Bill said, you know, they needed to convict him before they could think about releasing him. I hope President Trump and Xi Jinping and Keir Starmer can come to some kind of agreement now.
Due to the high-profile coverage this trial has received, do you think that there's a chance that he might receive a reduced sentence, or is the goal making an example out of him?
Well, I think the goal has been to make an example out of him, to show that no matter how wealthy, how powerful, how eloquent, how committed to freedom you are, that there's no one is safe in Hong Kong if you cross the government. And honestly, he turned 78 last week. You know, the absolute minimum he would get would be 10 years, and that's pretty much a life sentence in any event. So he has to count on China deciding that he's more trouble in prison than he would be out of prison. I mean, he's really causing them an international headache, and he gives the lie to China's claims to be a responsible international nation led by reasonable people.
This trial was widely viewed as a measure of the city's shrinking freedoms under Beijing's rule. What does this conviction mean for civil liberties in Hong Kong and China?
Well, if anybody had any doubt about the cruelty and barbarity of China's rule over Hong Kong, I think this puts an end to that. You know, we've had nearly 2,000 political prisoners in Hong Kong in the last 5 years. People continue to be arrested. There was a 15-year-old brought up on national security charges recently, so it doesn't matter if you're 15 or 78, they're coming after you. If they don't like what you're doing, if they don't like your T-shirt, or if they don't like the fact that you didn't give sufficient reverence to the national anthem. I mean, this was one of the freest cities in Asia, if not in the world. And in 5 years, this is what it's come to. Hundreds of political prisoners, you know, people of great faith and great courage, like Jimmy, in jail.
Mark Clifford, thank you so much.
Thank you.
In Rhode Island, heartbreak and fear after a deadly shooting at Brown University, where the suspect is still on the loose. Shots rang out on campus Saturday evening in the school's engineering building. 40 bullets were fired from a handgun, leaving 2 dead, Ella Cook and Mohammed Omorzakoff, as well as 9 others injured. A person of interest had been detained on Sunday but later released. So far, no other suspects have been identified.
I think we all got our hopes up that maybe this was the person. And so there's more of an emotional setback that has occurred as we've had to refocus to realize that we still have hopefully hours, but maybe days or more ahead.
And a world apart, a devastating mass shooting in Australia. 2 gunmen opened fire on a crowd during a Hanukkah by the Sea event on Bondi Beach. The attackers, identified as a 50-year-old father and his 24-year-old son, killed at least 15 people and injured 40 others. The pair opened fire from a pedestrian footbridge using high-powered long guns, including a rifle and a shotgun. They fired 50 rounds into the crowd. As Naveed Akram, the son, fired at the crowd, local fruit shop owner Ahmed Al-Ahmed ran toward him while others fled. In a life-saving act of bravery, he tackled and disarmed him, wrestling the long gun away. Despite being shot twice during the struggle, he held the shooter on the ground until the threat was neutralized. Police wounded the shooter. He remains in a coma in critical condition. Sajid Akram, the father, was shot and killed by police at the scene. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese condemned the massacre as an act of pure evil and anti-Semitic terrorism.
This was an attack deliberately targeted at the Jewish community on the first day of Hanukkah, which of course should be a joyous celebration. And the Jewish community are hurting today. Today, all Australians wrap our arms around them and say, we stand with you. we will do whatever is necessary to stamp out anti-Semitism. It is a scourge, and we will eradicate it together.
Joining now to discuss the attack is Auxiliary Bishop of Sydney, Tony Percy. Your Excellency, officials declared the shooting a terrorist attack and said it was designed to target Jewish people. Victims included a Holocaust survivor, a 10-year-old, and two rabbis. What is your message for interfaith harmony in Australia and around the world tonight?
Well, since the inception of Australia, we've tried to create a free and fair society. And the first fundamental condition, of course, for a free and fair society is there will be no violence against any particular group. And in this case, obviously, the Jewish community, which has been under enormous pressure here in Australia since October 7, 2023. So that would be the first message that I would deliver.
In the wake of a targeted act of anti-Semitic terrorism, how can the church and other faith leaders work together to ensure that Sydney remains a place of safety and multi-faith unity rather than division?
Well, I think that the dialogue is very important between the major religions and getting people to agree that there will be no violence, and secondly, that everything will be based on the dignity of the human person. The Australian Constitution is very clear. There will be no religious discrimination. It's very clear in one of the articles of the Constitution. And what we've seen here is a direct violation of those fundamental human values to a free and fair society. So the religions should get together. Australia has a large secular group of people who don't believe in God, but there's a larger proportion of people who do believe in God. So that would be very, very significant, I think.
Authorities have hailed the Muslim man who risked his life to stop the shooter as pure heroism. What message does his sacrifice send to the Australian community about our shared humanity?
Oh, no, that was great. And you saw the footage. It's incredible what he did. And so clearly part of the Islamic faith, there is a sort of small section that is prone to violence and inciting violence, as we've seen in the country. But there's a large section of Muslims, too, that want peace. And so we've got to sort that out and make sure that as we go forward, I mean, this is a critical time in Australia's history now. We have to make sure that we are not going to have attacks on minority groups, especially the Jewish people, this anti-Semitic sentiment that's been aroused. So that act by that Islamic fellow was very welcome indeed.
Bishop Percy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
President Donald Trump responds to the shootings at home and abroad. He called the attack in Australia a terrible situation, and he praised Brown University as one of the greatest schools anywhere in the world, adding that he wants to pay his respects to the victims. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Veronica, President Donald Trump described it as a rough day. He not only commented on those two shootings, but also on the deadly attack targeting U.S. troops in Syria.
President Donald Trump speaks about the tragedies during an event in the Oval Office.
Do you know what the motive of the shooter was? Is it
what? No, the no, it's that's moving along now, and we don't, and we're going to see what happens. Hopefully, they're going to capture this animal.
Vice President J.D. Vance also posted about the victims at Brown University. In the case of Ella Cook, he wrote, I am very sorry our country has lost one of its bright young stars. Eternal rest grant unto her, O Lord. President Trump earlier offered his reaction during a White House Christmas party.
I want to just pay my respects to the people, unfortunately, two are no longer with us. Brown University, nine injured, and two are looking down on us right now from heaven. And likewise in Australia, as you know, that was a terrible attack.
The president called it a horrible anti-Semitic attack in Australia.
I must say in Syria also, we had an attack in Syria, and we had three great patriots terminated by bad people. And not the Syrian government, it was ISIS.
In that case, two Iowa National Guard members lost their lives along with a civilian interpreter. The president promised retaliation.
I can tell you in Syria, there will be a lot of damage done to the people that did it.
First Lady Melania Trump also offered her condolences.
My thoughts and prayers go to the families of people who lost their loved ones around the world.
The president's event today focused on border security. He declared fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. He said no bomb kills as many people as that drug. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
U.S. lawmakers are reacting with anger and concern after the shootings in Australia and at Brown University in Rhode Island over the weekend. While Republicans are condemning the violence, Democrats say it brings up the long-standing debate over gun control. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with more. Eric.
Well, good evening, Veronica. Members of both sides of the aisle are offering prayers and condolences in the shootings. While Sunday's attack in Sydney took place during a Hanukkah celebration, Democrats say it's another example of extremists agitating for violence around the world.
There are those who are trying to stoke fear and hatred all across the globe. And what they're trying to do is convince us that our neighbors are our enemies. We have to reject that premise and recommit ourselves to building what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. called the beloved community.
Democrats are also arguing tonight that the Brown University shooting points to Republicans blocking tighter gun control legislation. They are also holding President Trump accountable. But Republicans, like Senator Bill Cassidy, argue violence is going down.
I do find that if there's something bad that happens, the checklist is first blame President Trump. Let's find out what the facts are. Let's see what's actually going on. There is a decrease in gun violence. I will point out among the things we did was that allowed records to be unsealed for a minor so that if there's a history of mental illness, a judge can order that that be looked at.
According to public data, there have been 75 school shootings in the U.S. this year and nearly 14,000 shooting deaths nationwide overall. Members of Congress continue to worry about their own personal safety and that of their families. A record number of threats against lawmakers have meant more of them are now taking advantage of new security programs offered to them, both at home and here in Washington, D.C. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, a somber day for Hollywood. A legendary filmmaker's life ends in a tragedy that has stunned the world. And a terrorist strike prevented in Southern California. Actor and director Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle were found dead in their California home in what officials are calling a double homicide. The 78-year-old was best known for directing several hit films, such as When Harry Met Sally and The Princess Bride. Los Angeles police released a statement confirming the suspect, saying in part, quote, "The investigation revealed that Nick Reiner, the 32-year-old son of Robert and Michelle Reiner, was responsible for their deaths. He was booked for murder and remains in custody with no bail. He had previously struggled with drug addiction and homelessness." Federal authorities have announced the arrests of four alleged members of an extremist group suspected of planning coordinated bombing attacks in Southern California.
The subject arrested envisioned planting backpacks with improvised explosive devices to be detonated at multiple locations in Southern California, targeting U.S. companies. These bombs were to blow up at the same time on midnight this New Year's Eve.
The suspects were arrested last week in the desert east of Los Angeles while testing explosives. Although the motive remains unknown, federal authorities say they are members of a pro-Palestinian anti-government extremist group called the Turtle Island Liberation Front. Officials say the plot included targeting multiple Amazon-type logistical centers and ICE agents. All four suspects are facing charges including conspiracy and possession of a destructive device. Authorities say additional charges are expected in the coming weeks. President Trump says the deal to end the war in Ukraine is closer than ever after European leaders and U.S. envoys discussed peace proposals with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Berlin earlier today. Meanwhile, U.S. officials say there is an agreement on about 90% of a U.S.-drafted peace plan, with Russia saying it would accept Ukraine joining the European Union. Washington is also prepared to offer security guarantees, though details remain unclear. Still, major sticking points include territorial disputes and long-term security, with Zelensky saying any guarantees must be legally binding. President Trump is set to dial into a dinner with negotiators and European leaders today. More talks are likely to be held this weekend in the U.S. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Message of Mercy. We take you to Rome for the last major Jubilee event of the year. Ohio has presided over the last major celebration of the Holy Year, the Jubilee of Prisoners. About 6,000 pilgrims took part in the event, including detainees and their families, prison chaplains, correctional officers, police, and prison administrators. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sedegren has more.
Beautiful flowers spring forth from the hard ground of sin and suffering. Pope Leo reminded all the faithful at the final major celebration of the Holy Year, the Jubilee for prisoners and for all those who serve within prison walls. Falling on the third Sunday of Advent, the Sunday of Joy, the Holy Father urged pilgrims from around 90 countries to never forget that Christ desires that no one be lost and that all may be saved.
Non bisogna stancarsi.
We must never tire, be discouraged, or give up. We must keep moving forward with tenacity, courage, and a spirit of collaboration. Indeed, there are many who do not yet understand that for every fall, one must be able to get back up, that no human being is defined only by his or her actions, and that justice is always a process of reparation and reconciliation.
The Jubilee event took place nearly 1 year after Pope Francis made history as the first Supreme Pontiff to ever open a holy door in a prison. At that time, the late Pope explained that he wanted everyone to have the opportunity to fling open the doors to their hearts and to understand that hope never disappoints.
It is significant because the Pope was very close to prisoners. 3 days after his election in March 2013, Monday Thursday, the Pope has to be here in Monday Thursday. But Pope Francis, every year, a year after the other, he went, he outreached prisoners by doing the Monday Thursday liturgical service in a prison.
Together with correctional officers, the ambassador of Malta to the Holy See brought 6 Maltese prisoners to the Mass, joining inmates from across the globe. They were encouraged by the Pope to trust that with the Lord at their side, something beautiful and joyful will always happen.
I'm a religious person. I go to Mass every week. I pray. So I think first it's important that you keep hoping because Like the Pope said today, it's very important that that we keep hoping, and everybody deserves a second chance.
It was a wonderful experience. I didn't even expect it was that wonderful. I was really involved during the Mass. It was wonderful. We have big hopes that we go out and start a new life.
While the Holy Door will close at the end of the Jubilee, the Church remains committed to helping prisoners maintain hope and faith, and to guiding them towards the true freedom that only comes from Christ.
If hope dies, everything dies. So ultimately, it's our role, kind of, to remind them, myself and the other two brothers that are present there. That's what we hope, that's what to remind the prisoners every day. I hope not only by our presence, but by being with them, sharing, listening to their stories.
In Rome, Benedict Sedegrian for EWTN News Nightly.
Discenda su di voi e con voi rimanga sempre.
I recently had the chance to speak with the executive director of the Catholic Prison Ministries Coalition, who shared with me what he hoped those attending would take away from the event.
Well, I hope they take away the spirit of the Jubilee, because this is the Jubilee year. And the Jubilee year will be ending, but the Jubilee spirit, I think, carries on. You know, when Jesus stood up in the temple and read from the scroll of Isaiah, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has come, anointed me to proclaim liberty to captives, that's something that continues.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, YouTube, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Good night and God bless.